fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you today. And you know, years ago, we did a show on runes, and that was probably back like 2007 or 2008. It's been way too long since we've revisited that or needed to revisit that, and we're going to do it with a little bit of a different spin today. There's a new book out called Wild Soul Runes, Reawakening the Ancestral Feminine, and just out, and we're talking today with the author of that book, Lara Valeda Vestin. We're so glad to have her with us, and she certainly has a very interesting background. She is an artist, author, storyteller, and educator, transforming chronic illness into a path of healing and reclaiming. She is the author of The Moon Diva's Guidebook and The Moon Diva's Oracle, illustrator of The Moon Diva's Oracle cards, and is currently working towards her PhD in philosophy and religion while exploring ancestral connection and disability as initiation. She shares her path of myth, folk magic, ancestor lore, and ritual practice with her Patreon community and through classes at the Wild Soul School. Lara, so good to have you on the program today.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. It's wonderful to be here.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, I want to kind of break this up. So first, let's talk about the runes a little bit. What are runes, maybe if there are people out there listening who are not familiar?
Oh, gosh, that's such a huge question. And it is the first question, you know, always. But runes, everyone has a different interpretation of what the runes are. It depends on if you're talking to archaeologists or historians or magical practitioners. I see the runes as living beings. I see them as pieces of the web of weird, which is the web that connects all life. And that's based in mythology. That's based in the origin story that we have about the runes, where Odin hung himself for 9 days and nights on the world tree and reached into the well of fate or origin or weird, guarded by the Norns, and took up the runes. And the word is nam, which means either to take, possess, or to learn. And that's how the runes made their way mythically into the world. Looking at the archaeological evidence, there's a lot of argument about whether or not they are a magical system or an alphabetical system. But I'm an animist, and I prefer to see them as living beings, as pieces of this web that connects everything in existence. So, you know, small answer.
Now, talk to us about the reawakening of the ancestral feminine. I mean, as we know, a lot of times women have unfortunately been put in a position where they take a back seat or somehow are minimized when they're so important. I dare say more important than men in many ways. Why did you decide to tie this into runes? How did that work?
Well, it's interesting with the runes is that we always are given the origin story with Odin. And I want to say, too, when I talk about the ancestral feminine, the feminine is not just in women, it's in men, too. It's a quality. It is an element, an essence, just like the masculine. And it's something that's in constant flux and balance in the myths and in nature and in magical practice. You can think of it in terms of polarity. They're both necessary qualities. And one of the things that's happened with patriarchy is that, you know, this system, again, this isn't men, this is a system, patriarchy, is that the feminine has been really diminished. Old stories, ancient stories tell us that both of these qualities are essential, but when we privilege one quality over the other, we all end up out of balance. And this idea of the runes belonging exclusively to Odin, or Odin being the keeper of this runic wisdom, this is feminine wisdom. It comes from a well. The well is a classical symbol of the feminine. And it's guarded by the Norns, which are these triple giantess figures from prehistory who represent the weird, represent mythic time, everything that ever was, is, or will be. And it's through the partnership of the masculine, this sacrifice, this initiation that Odin undergoes, that he receives this feminine wisdom. And so I really see that tale as a tale of union and partnership. And I think we're missing those tales. I think that we've become so focused on the polarities of the masculine and the feminine, we miss this essential part that those qualities exist in everything. And we can't exist without them. And to have them be consistently out of balance is something that puts us all sideways. But when we bring them back into balance, and I feel like there's a lot of ancient wisdom that we're just beginning to know and understand, to uncover, in especially in regard to European prehistory, around what a balanced society may have looked like prior to patriarchy. So we can start to vision where we want to be as we move forward socially. I think that partnership and balance are really wonderful intentions.
Now, when I think about something like tarot or other devices that people use for divination and those types of things, it almost becomes like a parlor trick. Do you think some of that has happened, unfortunately, with the runes?
Oh, anything can be used. Anything can be used as a parlor trick. Anything can be used or misused, misappropriated magically, capitalism has us misappropriating a lot of things for our own purposes, but certainly the runes have been really relegated to this, much like a lot of people will use tarot cards. Now you can get the tarot card t-shirt and the keychain to go with it. And that's happened with the runes as well. And that's not to say that you can't be an authentic practitioner building relationships with these beings or with your magical tools like the tarot, and still have the keychain. That's fine. But I think when we are only looking at the surface of things, then there is always a risk of misappropriating something that was once considered to be very sacred. And I don't know that we always remember that.
In the book, I think you talk about developing a daily ritual practice with the runes. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm big on ritual practice. I like to ritualize everything. It makes life a little bit more fun, and it certainly makes things meaningful. And the book is really my process for developing relationship with the runes. If I'm thinking of them as beings, then I'm going to be encountering them the same way I would a person. And so working with them individually in practice over the course of weeks, months, allows you to build that depth relationship. So the daily practice, each rune receives a week of attention in the book, and it's an inquiry-based practice. So you might create an altar for the rune. You might ask it questions and do some automatic writing to see if you're getting answers. You might hand carve your own rune for your rune set in that week. There's a lot of ways to engage with the rune, or you might just hold it peripherally in your mind as you go about your business and see what kinds of synchronicities start showing up in your life. And all of these things can be ritualized with a word or a breath, or just bringing intention to any single event is what makes it a ritual.
Now, talking about the runes as living beings, do you feel that if you have a set of runes and you start utilizing them, they become friends in a way who try to help you in your daily life?
Some of them do.
But like all people, they have a mind of their own, apparently.
they definitely have a mind of their own, and not, I mean, so there's, I work with 33 runes. That's a lot of people, right? So not all of them are going to be my, my kindreds at any given time. And some of them I have, you know, better relationships with now than I did in the past, and vice versa. So, but yes, I see them very much as helping spirits, as beings that are supportive of me and my journey. And I try to reciprocate. You know, part of that daily practice is feeding them with time and attention, sometimes literal food, like literally feeding the ancestors is a very ancient practice worldwide. So it's really about reciprocity and relationship. And by me giving time and attention, they give back and offer me support.
I know you work with people on these questions and so forth. Have you seen the runes once somebody starts to utilize them and have a relationship with them that it's made a difference in their lives?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, 100%. The first thing they're going to do is, and this has happened with many people that I've worked with over the years, and it happened with me too, is they're going to make sure that you're living with integrity. You know, they come from a time where there were ancestral codes that were really meaningful. And so if you are not living true to yourself or true to a life of honesty and diligence, they will happily reorder that for you. And then they will be transforming everything. So when I started working with the runes, everything in my life turned upside down. It was the most chaotic year, and I've had a lot of instability because of chronic illness and many other things. But we lost our home. We had custodial issues. Yeah, it was really rough. And yet everything that came out of that was 100% for the better. It was all essential. And looking back at that time, I can see how by reordering all of these things that were just kind of, you know, so many of us are living in a house of cards that's based on inauthenticity or, you know, even just lies that we're telling ourselves, right, about what we have to do versus what we choose to do. And it made a huge difference. It reordered things for the better. And I've seen that happen with a lot of people over the years.
Do the runes surprise you?
All the time. All the time. Just the fact that I'm sitting here with you talking about a book about the runes is absolutely shocking to me. I never would have thought that this would be the book that I would write and that would be published in my lifetime.
That's interesting. So you think that the runes, you feel that the runes had a direct impact on making this book happen?
I know they did, because my ancestral practice, my work is my daily spiritual work, is to listen. As an animist, I'm getting information from everything all of the time. And my work is to get myself out of the way, get my ego-based desires, as you know, in so much as I can, out of the way, and really try and listen to what's being asked of me. And try and be in service to the greater community that I live in, the many communities that I live in. And the runes ask things of me when I work with them. They, it's not just about me asking of them, they ask of me. And they asked me to create a 33-week long class when I was extremely debilitated and suffering from severe illness, as a practice to work with other people. And that class is what became the book. And they asked me to write a proposal for this book. And so I did, not having any idea that it would get approved. And they told me to say yes to every single interview, even though I'm an introvert and I would rather just be in my yard reading or weeding.
But I mean, your dedication to go through that is to be to overcome that, maybe in a way the runes were challenging you, saying, we know that Lara, maybe this is a little outside of her comfort zone. We're going to make her step out kind of on faith and do this.
Yes. Yes, they do. They stretch my edges all of the time. And when I listen and I follow what is being asked of me, and I should say, I always hold things as real and not real simultaneously. I find that's very useful. And so if folks listening have difficulty with, you know, spirits telling you what to do every day, it can be from any source. We know that we have voices within us that allow us to make good, healthy choices. And that can be our higher self. I choose to think of it as the runes and my ancestors, because that gives me a good foundation of strength. And when I listen and I do what's asked of me, things tend to go pretty smoothly. There's always setbacks and there's always difficulty, but that's where the practice comes in again and again, to listen.
Now, how does it work, though? I mean, they're magical, but can you speak to what you think is going on? Because that's pretty fascinating that they can create these realities and help make these things. It doesn't sound like it's predeterministic. They work with you and they work in concert with you. And of course, you have to agree to write a book or whatever your personal challenge is. But how does it work? How does the magic work? What are your thoughts?
It's such a good question.
I do my best.
So holding always that this is mystery and it is also story. So story is the way that we comprehend mystery. And to my understanding, the story is about the web of weird, which is, like I said, the web that connects everything. It is the energetic matrix of all that exists. And the runes are a part of the web of weird. They're vibrational beings. The web is constantly shifting and changing. The Norns, the keepers of the runes, are often seen as spinners or weavers, as working with thread. And that is a common theme throughout Europe, that you have these three sisters who are the keepers of fate, the fates, the matrone. They all are creating our fate constantly, forward and back through all of time, because that's how mythic time works. So in working with the runes, you're working with the Norns, you're working with the web of weird, and you are actually influencing fate forward and back. You are repairing rents or tears in the weird through your action, doing self-healing work, for example. You are, a big part of my work is bringing these ancestral systems, these ideas, just into public awareness, because these were things that I was seeking my whole life and that weren't available to me. When I was a young child or a teenager, I couldn't find what I was looking for. And so we begin to work with these threads, and the runes are part of that web. So they can help us to understand where to put our energy, how to tug here or there. And I do work a lot in meditation with the web of weird. And then I also have created a system of divination that's in the book around working with rune webs, which is using art and the runes in a reading to get a feeling for the web, kind of a snapshot of whatever your question is in the web at that particular moment in time. And that's the best understanding that I have of how the magic works, is that it's very energetic, it's very vibrational, and it's connective.
Now, in the book, I believe you talk about crafting a rune set. Can you talk to us about that process and why maybe is that more meaningful than if you just buy something off the shelf? Can you talk about that?
Yes. So I would say that 100% when we invest ourselves in our ritual tools, when we create them with our own bodies, they are fueled by that energy in the same way that, you know, any sort of reciprocal work that we do with beings or entities, always the energy that we put into it, we get energy back. So there's a long tradition of making ritual tools that is very ancestral practice. And certainly there's nothing wrong with buying tools and infusing them with your energy. Some people are not physically capable of making their own rune set. But I share the story of making my first rune set and how meaningful that was for me in the book, where I hand sawed each piece with a dull pruner and my children helping me hold the stick and hand carved and sanded each rune. And I've had people go through the meditations in the book where they worked with each rune for a week at a time and every week made a rune for their rune set. And so then you have this cumulative energy of 33 weeks of your own handwork and your own intention. And then you know where the wood comes from, and you know the time and energy that was put into it. And then when you engage with that, it really does have a very different energetic feel than something that was created by someone else. I will say, though, my brother sent me a set of runes this year for my birthday, and they are all hand carved and they are beautiful, and I work with them all the time. So I have a set that I made myself, but I also work with these other runes too. And
is that something you have to be careful about? In other words, your brother, obviously, it sounds like you have a great relationship, but do you have to be careful with runes? What if somebody would cast them with maybe not good intentions? Could that be dangerous if you got your hands on those and started to use them?
You know, I don't. So we're taught in this culture to be so afraid of non-traditional spirituality. You know, anything outside the historical religions is scary, and you know, that comes from a very binary thought process. There's good and evil. And I don't ever really feel that way about the runes. I think that, of course, anything can be used with malicious intent. But I can't see someone making a set of runes with malicious intent. And even if they did, if you are connected enough with your own helping spirits, with your own sense of center, then you're going to be fine, because you'll know whether or not those runes are good for you to use. And we have a good sense of intuition. Every single person has the ability to determine whether something is for them or not. A big part of this spiritual work is listening to that intuition. So if you get your hands on a set and they don't feel good to you, you know, maybe I've had some sit in the compost over a winter and molder, and then you pull them out and you sand them again and they're good to go. But maybe they're not for you, and maybe that's not the set that you want to have. But I don't know that it's dangerous. I think the danger comes from not knowing ourselves and not knowing how to listen to what is being told to us in a moment, whether or not something is for us or not.
Now, if somebody's listening and say, well, you know, this sounds like something I'd be interested in, but I'm a little intimidated. I'm a little scared. I'm a little frightened. What would you say to them?
I understand. I have been there. I walked a really circuitous path to get to this point, and I was scared for many years. But the thing that has been most helpful to me in overcoming a lot of spiritual fear, which I've found for myself, and I can't speak for other people, but just for myself, was mostly conditioning from my religious education as a child, is to connect with my ancestors, to connect with my, you know, the dead that I know, my beloved dead, and then to really begin to do that ancestral research and know that they live inside of you. And you have so much information at your disposal at any given time, because we are containers for millions of people. We are descendants from survivors, and that is a huge source of strength. And that's been useful for me in overcoming my fear, to know that my ancestors have a vested interest in my survival and in the survival of our lineage. And they're going to help support me, and they're not going to lead me astray.
Very interesting indeed. So I guess the important question is, how can we find the book Wild Soul Runes and also connect to all of your work?
Well, the book is available everywhere books are now. It just was released on the 1st of May. And then I have a Wild Soul School, which is online, and my website, laravesta.co, will take you to all of my places.
Lara, thank you so much for joining us today on The Other Side. I appreciate it. And everybody, check out Wild Soul Runes, Reawakening the Ancestral Feminine. Lara, thank you again.
Thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for tuning into the program. We certainly appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.